Well, thank you for joining Things That Matter. We've got guests from around the world as usual. Some of you are friends that I've known for decades, some from my time in politics, and some have responded to our invitation on our various social media platforms. And let me just go to those platforms now so you know what I'm talking about. You'll be pleased to hear that we try to post well and not too often. And we're always honored when you repost. So a great way to get out the word is to repost what you see on social media. So past shows are available actually on our website, Apple, and on Spotify. And there you have it. So if you really like the show as much as I think you will, then you can always send the recording to your friends. Tonight, we're going to have we've got two great panelists. I can't wait to introduce them to you. One is a citizen activist and one is a professional lobbyist. We're going to hear more about them very, very soon. But before I introduce those panelists, I want you to meet somebody who I think is perhaps one of the most effective lobbyists that I know, somebody who always gets her way and somehow seems to always triumph in the end, whether it's a tummy rub or a walk. My favorite four-legged friend, Abby, knows something about persistence. And I think our panelists will probably echo the importance of persistence in what they do. Let me also just relate one of my favorite stories about getting things done in elected life. It comes from the late Brooke Campbell, who was a constituent in West Vancouver when I served as member of parliament. And Brooke decided that given his belief in the system, his belief in democracy, he cared about parliament. He believed that an MP actually could get something accomplished for him. And what he wanted to do was to change the what was called the RIF program, the Registered Retirement Investment Program, so that seniors would get more benefits longer. And we worked together on it. And I suggested that he assemble a little group of experts who explained what he was trying to do. He did that. And then he said, what else do I have to do? And I said, well, you know, to get some political momentum, you have to show that this is appealing to a broad range of people. So he got over 90 people into a room at the Recreation Center in West Vancouver. He introduced what he was trying to do. And he said, do you like this? And they all put up their hands. So I could go to the Minister of Finance and say we had 100 people in West Vancouver who thought this was a great idea. And then we got past the minister to the prime minister. And lo and behold, the late Brooke Campbell got in budget 2015, the change he wanted that improved life for seniors across Canada. So I thought that was a great example of getting things done through elected officials. So that brings me to Kathy Peters and John Moonen. John worked between 1984 and 2001 as a lawyer and a senior civil servant for the BC government. He was also a partner in Western Canada's largest public affairs firm. Since 2001, he's operated his own government relations firm in Vancouver. He's also been active in the political process, having worked on over 50 federal, provincial, and municipal election campaigns. Now, one of those was especially memorable for me because he was the campaign manager for the successful election campaign of Liberal MP candidate Blair Wilson in 2006. Successful for John Moonen and Blair, but a tragedy for me because I was the vanquished Conservative opponent. I'm glad to say that I've got over this. Years, John. I got over it, though. And John has redeemed himself in my eyes, among other things, by his very effective and generous volunteer work in the community. Kathy Peters is a former inner city high school teacher who raises awareness about human sex trafficking to politicians, police, and the public. She's received all kinds of accolades for her work, including the Queen's Diamond Jubilee Medal and praise from numerous law enforcement detachments. She recently impressed police right across the country presenting at an RCMP human trafficking webinar. She's been a keynote speaker at gatherings focused on missing and murdered Indigenous women. And believe this or not, she's presented to over 600 groups of elected and appointed officials across Canada. So that's an incredibly powerful track record. So now that I've introduced you both, I'd like to hear from you, and you can choose who goes first. What's the difference between you? One of you is a professional lobbyist. The other I call a citizen activist. You both want to get things done, things that will be good for people, things that you think should be accomplished. And how do you think that you're different? And this is, you know, for people in the audience who want to get things done, maybe they're the citizen activist, maybe they need the lobbyist, maybe they will become the lobbyist. What do you think? Who wants to go first?
Go ahead, Kathy.
Okay, thanks, John. I'm going to say my work is more organic and it's not so organized. Word of mouth has really helped spread what I do. So I'm really part of a grassroots movement. I'm just a private citizen, and I do this work on my own time and my own dime. I initially met with law enforcement, then I focused on meeting with politicians at all three levels of government. As the three levels of government became aware of my advocacy work, then there was increased traction and action. So, for example, I have now presented to the majority of the city councils and regional districts in British Columbia. My ask at each one was that they would write me a letter of support, and that would be sent to the provincial government and to the federal government. That's what opened the doors. That's what opened the doors for me to get meetings then with provincial politicians and with federal politicians. But I do want to add, I have worked really, really, really hard at this. This is hard work. I am writing continually. I mean, just even preparing for this, I have spent hours preparing. And now I'm trying to reach media so that they could address the issue that I deal with. The coverage of Amanda Todd and that sexual exploitation was very good, but that was an event that happened over 10 years ago, and things have gotten a lot worse. So good media coverage will also get the attention of politicians.
Fascinating. So I'm hearing some distinctives. You have a very specific, it's a huge issue, but it's a specific issue. That's one. Two, you're driven internally. I mean, you care about this and you're relentless. I know that. So those are a couple of distinctive things about you, Kathy. I'm a little humbled that you spent hours preparing for tonight, but anyway, we'll move on. John, you have this in your DNA, right? I mean, you not only are you a professional at what you do, but I recall that your father did this, and was it your grandfather also?
No, my dad lobbied in Washington and Ottawa and Victoria. My brother lobbies in Europe and the United States. I have a cousin who's a lobbyist, and I'm a lobbyist. I think my mom says it's just because we don't know how to do anything else.
Okay.
So, but, you know, Kathy, what you were saying, all of those things that you've done are very professional. I mean, that's what we do too. And I guess I think you're more noble because you do it for free. I charge. But you have a very professional approach dealing with the media, identifying politicians, you know, writing. I mean, it's the same process. And it's not a particularly difficult process to figure out. But as you say, Kathy, implementing it can take hours, weeks, sometimes years. But the basic premise is you decide what your objective is, as you have done. You decide who the decision makers are. You decide who influences them. And that could be the media, could be their party, it could be their colleagues, it could be their 12-year-old daughter. And by the way, teenagers are excellent lobbyists, at least the ones that I've known. And once you've decided who the decision makers and the influencers are, you craft the message and you deliver them. It's just straight, just like that. Bang, bang, bang. And it's exactly what you're doing, Kathy. And so it's not brain surgery, but it's a lot of work.
So if I'm sitting listening to this and I've got a burning issue where I want to affect change, I'm already noting it's hard work. Kathy, you said that, you've demonstrated that, and everything, John, you said is consistent with that. You kind of simplified things, John, by saying, you know, it's there's a sequence of events, but I'm guessing that each of you could go a little further and say, what are two or three things that are always there that you always have to do if you want to get something done? What are the things that might be so ingrained in you because you've been doing it for a while, but you would want to tell someone who's starting anew to get something done? Let's begin with you, John.
Well, I think one of the tricks of this trade that might seem counterintuitive is that good lobbying is about 90% listening. And whether you're listening to your client in my case, or your constituency in Kathy's case, whether you're dealing with a politician, it's all about listening. Because I think if you listen, often the solution pops out. And when you're talking, the politicians don't always get a chance to have their say. So what I normally do in an hour-long meeting is I may talk for 5 minutes, and then I don't give them speaking notes and PowerPoint presentations and handouts. I listen. I let them tell me. And that's presuming, of course, that they've been told what the meeting's about in advance. So it works way better. And once they have talked for 45 or 50 minutes, they become a stakeholder. They're on your side. And so it's listening and trying to discern what your opposition might be saying, what the media are saying, what the decision makers are saying. That's the biggest part. It's sort of like social work, really.
That's really profound. I didn't expect you to say that. It makes me recall some local North Van counselor who served multiple terms, and the tribute to him was that he was a fantastic listener. I wish I could remember his name. He's passed on now. But that is really, really interesting. So Kathy, what would you say? What are two or three must-dos when you're trying to get something done?
I just want your whole audience to know that I'm here to learn. I'm here to learn from John Moon. And so anything I've learned has been sort of like just like figuring it out along the way. But I came up with 3 points. First of all, you've got to know your topic really well. So what I'm trying to do is traffic proof every community in British Columbia. So I don't want human sex trafficking to take place in any community. So that's sort of my goal. So I have to know this topic really well. I have to be passionate about it. That's not hard because I'm a bit of a mother bear, if anybody knows me. You have to be strategic. I've learned how to be strategic. And Joy Smith, she's a former MP. She said to me, Kathy, be focused. Be like a laser beam. That was helpful. Number two, always polite and courteous. I know this sounds goofy, folks, but I will always wear a suit when I go to any meeting with law enforcement or with politicians. I want to show them that courtesy. And I think it's important. Number three, have an ask that they can actually do and follow up. So I've had to really hone skills and learning. Okay, what is it I really want? What do I want them to do? And then I come up with something that I know they could actually deliver on. And they love, any politician loves it when they go, actually, I can do that for you. And 9 times out of 10, they will say, yes, I will do that for you. And they do it right away. But I've had to figure out ahead of time, what is it I want from them? What do I want them to do? What is something within their reach, within their grasp that they can actually deliver on? And they feel so good. And my goodness, we all feel good when they deliver.
Well, in full disclosure, your son, Josh Peters, worked closely with me in Parliament and taught me a lot about communications. And one thing that Josh and I learned in our experience was that we would receive in our office something like 5,000 emails in a month. And it took me, I would say, a year to 2 years of learning to figure out how to process that kind of volume properly. So one of the takeaways is if you're dealing with a fresh person new in that job, they're learning as they're going. Their learning curve is huge. And remember, I went in having the experience of being an international lawyer and a professional and a business person. So I had some experience in dealing with a large intake, but I've always found myself wrong-footed when someone would run into me in the community at church or something and say, "Oh, John, you didn't respond to my email." Well, I felt terrible. I wasn't doing my job. I wasn't being responsive. But I wish the person could understand the fire hose from which I was drinking. So one of the things that I tell people who are trying to get things done is, sure, if you're going to send an email, that's part of the process, but do not depend on the fact that it actually got out, that it was received, that it was opened, that it was opened by the right person, that it was read, or that it was understood. And if any one of those ingredients fails, then your message did not get through. Mm-hmm. So if you want to get through to an MP, or I'm guessing a provincial or a local politician, make sure you follow up with a phone call, try and get a meeting if you're serious, and you will start rising to the top like cream. Your message must be important because you're that committed to getting the message across. Any thoughts about that?
I wonder if I could just jump in there. So I think of, I'm in touch with every member of parliament in Canada. I mean, who does this as a private citizen? Like nuts. So 338 MPs have received hard copy letters and packages from me, because I've been told MPs don't typically get hard copy anything, let alone a short letter that is signed with a simple ask. So the hard copy thing really opened the doors for me. Then I follow up, just what you're saying, with an email. And I usually by that point get a response and go, "Oh, by the way, the hard copy letter that I sent with the ask," then I get a response. If I don't at that point, then I do what you're suggesting. Again, my son said, "Mom, then pick up the phone and phone." When you do those three things, and then the fourth piece is always asking for that in-person meeting. I was a bit nervous about even doing that, kind of embarrassed, but my son Joshua said, "Mom, ask for the meeting." And again, if you do those steps, you kind of win the respect. I don't want to say earn the right, but you get access.
You win the respect and people know you're serious. So mm-hmm. for some, your invitation of a meeting conveys two things. One is you're serious, you want to get it done. But the other, which you might not think about, Kathy, is it's a threat. You're threatening to take away an hour of my time. Mm-hmm. So is there anything I can do to avoid meeting with you to get you off my back and get something done? You know, and think of the psychodrama that's going on here. Most people in the audience are thinking, well, it's fairly basic. You want to get something done. It's good. You convey it and the politician does it. But there's all of these other things going on that are pulling away from your ability to get their attention, right? So how do you get their attention, John, when you know that they have 24 hours in a day? They've got 5,000 emails coming in. They can't get to everything they want to. Why should they get to your issue?
Well, I think it's important to start with the question, is this the right person to be talking to? Because often the elected officials who have sometimes huge bureaucracies aren't aware of what's even going on in their department or the ministry. So the first question, really backing up, is do I need a meeting with the MP or the minister or premier or prime minister or mayor? As you say, they're all very, very busy. And you can almost alienate them by taking up too much of their time. And a number of people that I've dealt with were quite pleased to know that there wasn't actually a meeting, but they could talk on the phone or respond to an email. Don't force them into that in every situation. There are some that, unless they look you in the face, sit down, shake your hand, listen, they can't make a decision. But many of them, if they do get the right approach and sometimes a soft approach, it works. And in about 90% of the time with provincial and federal ministers, if you will, I target the civil servants. Start with them. Yeah. Find where the file is in the department and use the minister's interest or you know, inquiries as a last resort. Because the civil servants are there. They're professional in this country. They're not corruptible. They're talented. They do the job and they know the files. So literally 90% of my files, I deal with the bureaucrats.
So, and by the way, folks in the audience, if you've got questions, do send them in on the chat line and I'll do my best. I can't get to them all, but I'm going to try and get to everyone I can. One of the questions that came in is actually from my cousin, Greg Weston, who was a senior member of the press gallery for years and years in Ottawa. And he said, John, are you potentially confusing people by conflating the elected official with the appointed official? Just exactly the topic you were getting to, John. I mean, and I think you've already opened this issue for us by saying sometimes you want to choose the appointed person. You always want to choose the right person, whoever that may be. And it sounds to me like a big part of your role is sizing up the potential audience and making sure you're going to the most effective person, because you also have only 24 hours in a day and you need to use your time sparingly. So I'm going to go to you first, Kathy, on this one. When is it the elected person and when is it the appointed person? Then I've got a great anecdote for you and our audience, but I'll wait for your answers. Go ahead, Kathy.
Okay. So first of all, the issue I'm dealing with affects everybody. So I'm not like a lobbyist that has one issue. I mean, this is human sex trafficking is in every community and sexual exploitation. And it's just so you can all see, this is what I've done. Be closer. Amazing. Closer. Oh, closer up there. Be yeah. Amazing to stop sexual exploitation. So I've ended up with this flashy brochure that every MP has received. Here's my deal. You're going to laugh at me, you guys. Because I'm not the professional on this. I'm just the mother bear thing. I'll talk to anybody. So for example, if I phone an MP's office and I get the staffer on there, I'll talk to them for half an hour if they'll let me and tell them about the whole issue. And I've made so many friends with staffers. They are the gatekeepers, of course, to the members of parliament, the elected officials. Of course, I want to get to the elected officials, because with the issue I'm dealing with, we've got policies and laws in this country that I don't want to lose. We have a law, for example, called the Protection of Communities and Exploited Persons Act. I don't want to lose that law. So I want to get to the elected officials. But in the meantime, I will talk to any staffer. And I've learned to do that a lot. And that will often open the door. So I will talk to anybody.
Interesting. Okay. I bet John's got some thoughts about that.
Well, I would love to have that ability and spend time like you do, Kathy. Unfortunately, because I'm being paid by the hour, I have to, you know, keep mindful of what's good for my client. But I think the other thing is what I try to do is keep it simple. I had a prospective client phoning me up that had a huge tax issue with the provincial government, and he asked for a series of ads in the Globe and Mail, a huge petition, a protest on the lawns of the legislature. And I was thinking in my own mind, oh, there's going to be a lot of fees here. And I made the mistake of saying, have you talked to the deputy minister? And he didn't know who the deputy minister was. And I said, well, I'm going to give you his number. Pick up the phone and just talk to him. And phoned him back the next day. And he said, yeah, we don't need a series of ads. We don't need a protest. We don't need a petition. The deputy agreed with me. So as you say, and I think Josh, your son has said, pick up the phone and solve it in a direct, simple way. And I may not make as much money, but my clients are happier.
Fascinating. Okay, I've got so many thoughts spinning in my head. I want to respond to Eileen out there. Eileen asked, can we increase the volume on our side? Typically, that's done on your side, Eileen. So go to your volume control and hopefully you can bring up the volume. Kelly, you've got a great question. I'm going to come to you in a second. I just want to relate to you this anecdote. You see the pin on my lapel. It's a bike pin that relates to Bike Day on the Hill, which is an event that I started many years ago, and overall to the promoting of more activity, physical activity in Canada. So my thing is trying to get Canadians to be more physically active for their physical, mental, and spiritual health. And Happily, there's a large group of volunteers who work with me on this at the Canadian Health and Fitness Institute. But the anecdote is this. I went down to Washington, D.C. to see how the National League of Cyclists lobby Congress people on promoting cycling. And they had a session. This is while I was an MP. And the session was, how do you lobby a congressperson? So you could change the word. How do you lobby an MP or a MLA or a councillor? And what the speaker said, I've never forgotten. They said, if you aim only to speak to that elected official, and if worse, you're rude or disdainful to the assistant or the gatekeeper, then you will have done yourself a horrible disservice, because the politician does what she called the grip and grin. The grip is they'll shake your hand and they will meaningfully look you in the eye and they will smile because they know that's what they're supposed to do. I was there. How many meetings a day would I have? Would I remember the names of the people the following day that I'd met the previous day? Sometimes. The previous week, the previous month? No, I couldn't. I couldn't keep up. But the key person in the office, said this speaker, is the administrative person, the gatekeeper, who records your name, hears about your expertise, knows if there's anything about human trafficking that comes up in the future. The person to call is Kathy Peters, right? And they keep the database and they remind the politician who's got the memory of a fruit fly to consult with the right person when the issue comes up. And so I've never forgotten that. And of course, I put so much emphasis on the people who I worked with, the staff. I tried to spend time with them because I knew they were the ones who really had the capacity to go deep into an issue, or to brief me when I needed the briefing, or to find the right persons. So don't forget the gatekeepers, the admin persons, you know, and for heaven's sakes, always treat them with that same respect that you were talking about, Kathy, at the beginning of the show. Kelly, who is with Brave Education for, let me get the title right, Brave Education for Trafficking Prevention. Apparently a young person is asking, do you have something specific for youth advocates? And she says, who have limited time to be effective in anti-trafficking prevention, education, and advocacy. I would suggest that the question goes even beyond that. A young person who feels perhaps inexperienced and doesn't know the ropes, what would be your words to, I so love this question because I'll let you in on something. I'm hoping that our podcast is especially helpful to young people who want to promote good leadership in life. So what are your words for Kelly? And by the way, I said she, but Kelly, I realize you could be a he, so forgive me.
No, it's Kelly, and I know who she is.
Okay.
She's a fabulous educator from Alberta doing great work on prevention education. And I'm sort of really focused on British Columbia. I think that's the difference. And I want everybody to know with human trafficking, BC is far behind every province in the country. So that's why I'm quite passionate for British Columbia. But I would really recommend going to my website. It is upgraded. It is really good. It's beamazingcampaign.org, all one word, lowercase, beamazingcampaign.org. And the same fellow, very talented man that did my brochure, has done the website. It's all one page, but down at the bottom, there's teaching videos, there's hotline numbers, there's research, there's all the resources you need to become an expert. Anybody can become an expert. And I've got downloadable handouts on the bottom of the website that you can click and open, and you got reams of material there. So it's all there. And I should add, my new book will be out in May, and that will be a great textbook or primer on the issue. So any young person that wants to jump in on this, and I've got a lot of young people that I'm working with and are mentoring, I guess, my website is a great place to start, and then the book that follows.
You know, I knew you, Kathy, as somebody who was unable to express all of her own gifts and the work that she's doing. So you've really changed in your decade of relentless work on this issue, and I commend you for it. We wouldn't be able to benefit from what you have to offer unless we knew about it. John, what are your insights for young people? And you do some teaching on the area, so I'm thinking that this is something that you've thought a lot about.
Well, I think it's really important, young people, old people, doesn't matter who, is to get them involved in the political process, because very few Canadians do that now, as you know, John. A small percentage will get involved in a party, an election, you know, work for an MP. But it's really, really important. If you have sort of interests that, you know, that would be sustained by changing government policy or making a difference in society, get involved in politics at any level. And it's a great education. You meet the ultimate decision makers you may want to lobby. There's a ton of benefits and job prospects, the whole thing. So as you said earlier, I've done 50 plus election campaigns, enjoyed it, met new people, learned something new. And I started in, I don't know, high school, I guess. So I think I would urge young people, and it doesn't have to be through a party, any political campaign, a protest, you know, an environmental campaign, something advocating for social housing in your neighborhood, but get involved in something. And you'll probably also learn how much needs to be done. So it will motivate you, but the skills you'll get, the tools, other things, best thing you could do.
Okay, so this leads me right to a question that I'm wrestling with in my life, but I don't think it's just all about me. I think the question I'm gonna raise with both of you really goes to, especially young people, but anybody who is sick and tired and wants to change because it's just not good enough the way it's working now. If you are thinking along those lines, is it better to run for office or to work for those who do? And I'm asking the question because, you know, I've run for office before. I've been an MP. I've won campaigns and lost campaigns. And I'm deciding as we speak about whether I'm ever going to run again or not. I'd like to hear your views on this. Is it better to be in the elected position and trying to affect change on things you care about, or to work for those who do?
I want to answer that right away, because I'm going to say, John Weston, you need to run again. Why? Because you can. You can do it. You're brilliant. You know how to do it. We need you. So, sorry, I'm just going to toss that one out there for what it's worth.
And we're going to delete that from the recording because it sounds just like a paid political announcement.
No, nobody told me to say this. But I'm just a fan. And I think Joshua, our son, always said you were one of the hardest working MPs in the House. So there just aren't people like you. So you need to know that.
But the point is, can you get things done better through that, through all of the distractions, the flying back and forth, the attending of committees, the going to question period, the, versus focusing on human trafficking as a citizen activist? Which is the more effective route?
Well, I'm going to answer that because I think you know me. Well, maybe you don't know me. I would have loved to have been a politician when I was very young. Absolutely. I've always followed politics. My dad taught me about the importance of following politics. So I'm sort of a politician undercover, you know, in secret. I'd love to be a politician. I went, talked about it with my family at length. And of course, they said, no, Mom, no, because you have found your issue. You're more effective here. And for the last 10 years, you've really built something. So stay with what you're doing. In your case, you know how to do the MP thing. You would not waste any time. Again, age would be on your side. You've got the experience. So that would be my response to that. Not everybody's cut out to be an MP. And I would say to all of you, find out what you're good at. And what do people around you say? Do they encourage you? Yeah, you know, you should run. You really should do this. Or do they say, no, stay in your lane? And that certainly is the message I've gotten. Thank you, Randine Hardy. You've helped me with this one too. Stay in your lane has been the message for me. And but for you, I think it's something totally different. But I would say to everybody out there, what is your gifting? What are you passionate about? What do you love? What are you good at? And then stay in your lane and go make a success of it. Go have an adventure.
Okay, so I'm going to hold on to that thought, stay in your lane, because we're going to come back to that in a minute, which means don't get in the wrong lane, but we're going to come back to that. John, what are your thoughts? I mean, I love asking the guy who ran the campaign for the guy who beat me in 2006. Should a person run or should a person get involved and not run?
Well, just to be clear, I voted for you after that.
Okay, that's a lovely compliment. but really, for the benefit of people who are thinking about their futures, you know, I know there's some young people right now on the line in Taiwan. There's some young people around the country watching this show, and maybe what you say will determine whether they run or whether they become a campaign manager or work as a lobbyist.
Well, I often get to the point with a client and I say to them, it's one thing to spend all this time and money trying to influence a decision maker. There comes a point where you should become the decision maker, i.e. run, or, you know, join the civil service and aspire to be a director general or a deputy minister or a crown corp head. It's not just the elected people that have power in this country, but at some point, you may want to become a decision maker. Now, the opposite of that is, as you well know, Mr. Weston, it is a tough life to become an MP, a cabinet minister, a mayor, an MP, you know, it doesn't matter what. It's tough. Not just getting there, the election process, the nomination process, but the hours. It's tough on your family. It's tough on your health. It's tough on your pocketbook. So you really have to want to do that and make a commitment to that. It is not easy. And I've seen so many people who burned out or, you know, had other adverse impacts. So it's not an easy career. It's sometimes easier to be, you know, part of a group that influences the decision makers than it is to be the decision maker herself.
Well, when we get to our panelist picks, and I hope I can draw those up on my screen, we're going to look at some resources which go to those topics. So that's really helpful. You have mentioned a couple times about getting to the right persons. And one of our audience members, James, has asked, how do you get the emails and phone numbers for federal deputy ministers? How do you find those people?
Well, it's all public knowledge. And there are federal government directories. And it's amazing sometimes if I can't find one, I just Google the name and emails come up, phone numbers and so forth. So the trick really is not getting their email or their phone number, but figuring out which one has the file. Which ministry is it in? In fact, I've had occasions where clients have said they had this problem and they thought it was a different level of government than it actually was. So sometimes it's provincial, sometimes it's federal. So you really, in zeroing in, don't worry too much about the tools to find numbers and emails, but figure out who it is. And then try to understand them. Where are they in their career? What's their background? Have they come from the private sector or social services? Do they have a degree in something? What do they do in their spare time? And with the internet, you can find all this stuff out pretty easily. So, you know, get to know the decision maker, try to empathize with them, and that will help to understand where they're coming from.
It is surprising what you can get. There's also a directory that I've found useful called GEDS, G-E-D-S, G for George, E for Edward, D for David, S for Sam. What does the acronym stand for? Government?
Employee.
Directory service, I think. It's amazing for the federal service. So you probably find your people right there. But generally online, you can find at least the minister's office, and you'd be surprised how much access you can get. When I was in law school, my then roommate Loudon and I, we drove across the country trying to see how many premiers we could get in to see with no appointment. And we actually saw two. And we couldn't believe that they would make time for two itinerant law students with no real agenda. And we were a little bit disappointed that they would see us, but we did. Anyway, I thought we would get back to this thing, get in or stay in your lane, because it suggests that the corollary, don't get in the wrong lane. And I'm wondering what mistakes or traps people fall into when they're trying to influence an elected or an appointed official. What are some of the things you've seen or done yourselves that are good cautionary tales?
Well, I think a lot of people, perhaps because they watch too much American TV, think that to get anything out of an elected official in Canada, you have to make a donation to the party or to their campaign. And of course, you know, companies and unions can't make political donations, and even personal ones are limited. And money is not a big factor in a lot of politicians' ability to get reelected. As you know, John, they're limited by how much they can spend. And so there really is not any particular benefit. And I've never had to make a donation to see somebody. And in fact, there's a considerable downside, because a donation, even a small one, can force that decision maker to recuse themselves. So I would, whereas in the United States, donations are pretty common and almost de rigueur. So I would stay away from making any kind of political donations, at least of cash. Your time is one thing, advice is another, but not cash. And I think the other mistake some people make is they assume it has to be in the media. I've had meetings with cabinet ministers, back-to-back meetings on the same issue, where one cabinet minister said to me, if I don't see this in the media, I'm not going to think it's very important and it won't do anything. And the next one says, you know, if I see this in the media, you're not going to get what you want. They don't want to be forced by media attention. The one said, get it in the media. The other said, don't. So, I mean, media is a tool. And I know, Kathy, you've used it very effectively, but it's not the be all and end all. Mm-hmm. I am a big fan of personal contact. Find the decision maker, meet them, phone them, talk to them, be where they're going to be. You know, my dad used to say, as a lobbyist in Washington and Ottawa, he called it creative loitering. You know, be there, be where the announcement is, where the fundraiser is, where the election campaign is, where the convention is. You can find out where they're all going, be there. It's creative. But it's really, really important in a country this small and a province even smaller to try to make individual personal contact, not always face-to-face because they're very busy, but at least by phone, or even making having a handshake at a convention and following up later. Mm-hmm. It's really, really important. Tough to do in a really big market, you know, like the United States, or bigger provinces. But, you know, really, this is a small town. And if you can't find that minister, the AG, the mayor, I mean, you may not be as effective. Kathy, you're a testament to that. You find them.
Yeah, fascinating. So the corollary to things you should do, things you should not do, you should follow up. I guess the mistake is to not follow up. In other words, you know, thank you for seeing me. I'm hoping within 2 weeks to get back to you to hear what you thought we could do together on this. It's sort of a good way to leave a meeting. So there's a timeline and a sense that some other foot is going to fall, right? Let me get to your point on the media. And Kathy, please don't forget your thoughts on this. I recall, you know, over time I've developed this cottage specialty in helping extract Canadians who are wrongfully detained overseas. And on one file, I recall that the media account was, and this was about Bill Sampson. You might all recall him. He was imprisoned in Saudi Arabia, and he was wrongly accused of planting car bombs. And the media in Canada was starting to repeat that narrative. And it was important. It was essential for us to get in the media the alternative account that he went to visit the victims. He was detained and the car bombs continued. There was no motive. I went through all of these things and I got the Vancouver Sun to publish that account. And sometimes media people like other human beings, can be lazy, drink their own bathwater. If the bathwater they're drinking is favorable to your cause, then that's going to help you. But you don't always want to go public. And there are other cases where somebody has been detained, and the last thing you want to do is get a public Donnybrook going with the government, because then they'll be backed into a corner and decide that they cannot release the person because it would be a loss of face. So, you know, very sensitive how we deal with the media. Kathy, what are some traps or mistakes that you have encountered in your journey?
Well, I think I've made all of them. I'm sure I have, because I feel like I'm winging it, except I do have the advantage of a son and a daughter-in-law who tell me very firmly what I can and what I can't do. But I put down four mistakes. Sending only one letter or one email with no follow-up. You've already said that, John. That doesn't work. So persistence is the key. Just keep asking, 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 asking. I find that works. As a matter of fact, funny story, I was in touch with MPs in Ottawa, and some MP said to me, you're a legend. And I thought, how is this? And they said, because we're all hearing from you. We all talk about it, and you're a legend. So, you know, you never know. Remember, the goal is to get that in-person meeting. Number two, always have an ask about something specific they can actually do. I mentioned that before. When you send a letter or email, keep it short and concise. Just a fact or two that really, you know, gets their attention with the ask, not pages and pages of information that the official, the gatekeeper, nobody has any time to read or understand or digest. So I think in the 10 years of working on this human trafficking issue, I've learned how to get really super concise. Number four, when you do get that meeting, I use a script. My son says to me, Mom, don't wing it. Have a script so you know exactly what you're going to say and then what you need from the official. And I also stay within the time limit. So funny story, typically when I present to city councils, I've even been given like 3 minutes to do a presentation on the global sex trade. Like, how are you supposed to do that? I learned to do it. And I timed myself and I could do it in 2.5 minutes. Well, guess what? Then you earn another 15 minutes because everybody wants to ask you questions. So it turns into a 20-minute presentation. City councils will typically give me 5 minutes or 10 minutes. So instead of presenting in five, I'll do it in four. And then again, I earn more time that way. So stay within your time limits. Again, John, I love what you said about listening. That is absolutely brilliant. I know that I'm learning now as I get meetings with cabinet ministers. I will set aside at least 10 or 15 minutes at the end to say to them, what do you think? What can you do? What do you know about this topic? And you're right. The listening key piece is key.
When I traveled around one of the larger ridings in the country that I represented, there were 12 local governments. And one by one, I would go and I would say, what are your priorities? I would sit with council mayor and council members and say, what do you want to get accomplished for your constituents? The really effective ones would give me one, two, most three priorities. And the ones that you knew weren't going to get anything done is when they gave me 15. Because if they give you 15 priorities, they don't have priorities. And so, you know, what you said is really, really true. If you can keep it concise, if you can make sure your asks are clear and small in number, then you can focus the person and give them that wonderful psychological reward of a victory. Mm-hmm. And you both, I think, do that very, very well. Well, listen, our time is ebbing, but I want to finish on an upbeat note, and I want to give you the chance to tell us a story about something that you've dramatically changed for positive, for good and not for evil. Who wants to go first?
Yeah, go ahead, Kathy. You've done more of that than I have.
Oh, dear. Oh, my goodness. I mean, the simple stories are when I do a presentation and then I get somebody that comes up and hugs me and holds me and won't let me go. And they say, every time you open your mouth, you are saving lives. The Indigenous women typically will tell me that. So that's really big. I think the biggest surprise I got, though, was getting a message from Ed Fass' office, the MP out in Abbotsford, to say that he was awarding me with a Queen's Platinum Jubilee Medal. I mean, I just broke down and completely fell apart. It was at that point I realized maybe I was having some impact.
Congratulations. And from a very highly esteemed member of Parliament who's respected around the Parliament by all parties. Yeah. John?
Well, I think one of the concerns I had, because I was so active with a variety of political campaigns, that one day I might be campaigning against somebody that subsequently I would have to lobby from the other party, not unlike our situation here, John. And so I was kind of known for a time as a member of a certain party, and I bumped into a cabinet minister from the other party, and I said, well, you know, do people worry about me, you know, because I'm partisan? And she said, well, you know, the thing about us is there's a very small percentage of people who are active in the political process. So at least you're seen as someone who appreciates our lives, what we have to go through, what an impact it has on our families, what it does to our waistlines. I mean, you know, so you understand this. So we have this common bond. So yes, you did work for the other party. Yes, we know you did work for the other party, but we have this little shared secret of what politics is all about. Mm-hmm. There was empathy and sort of a shared experience, which surprised me. I thought she was hyper-partisan, and I thought she would have said, well, I'm surprised anybody in our party would even talk to you. Absolutely not. So that's that shared experience. Another benefit of getting involved in politics, but it doesn't have to be politics that brings you, you know, together with these people. So even in a hyper-partisan province like British Columbia, you know, it's personal. It can be personal. And I guess the other thing is, and this should be the case with every profession, is never lie. Because you will be found out. There's just too many ways of catching you. So you got to be straightforward with these people. You never lie to try to get them to make the decision you want, because they can always reverse it. So, you know, it's credible. As I think Kathy said, keep your message short. And literally, in almost every case, every file I've ever been on, you can put it onto one page. Mm-hmm. One page. The ask, the background, and, you know, everything on one page. And anything more than two, you lose. So keep it simple, keep it personal, and keep it honest.
I think Churchill must have heard your brief, because that's what he would say.
Oh, really?
Well, if it wasn't on one page, you'd be fired, and B, you wouldn't read it. Not in that order. So this is one of the very favorite parts I have. At the end of each of these shows, I get panelists to pick their favorite resources, so that anybody in the audience who wants to telescope, go deeper, learn more about what you're talking about, has some things to look at. I always think it's a shame after, you know, you hear from great speakers like John and Kathy, and you know they've got all these other things they would have loved to have told you, and you never get the benefit of hearing. So at least we're going to hear about what you think, or what we call the panelists' picks. So I'm going to go to share screen again here. And let's see what we get. We're going to go there. And then, hang on. Still a labor of love, but it's a labor. And so we're going with yours first, John. Now, I'm hoping that those in the audience can see what I'm looking at, which is John Moonan's picks. And if you would, John, just take us through these. You've got FDR, you've got Fotheringham, and then the thing by Bennett.
Well, I think these are all sort of biographies, but they've all been done by journalists. I think if you want an insight, and particularly Conrad Black's book about Franklin Delano Roosevelt, the way he operated, how he became president, he was governor of New York, how he used the political process, what kind of a man he was, because FDR probably was the most impactful person of the 20th century. Yes, Churchill's up there too, but FDR, I think, had a broader brief, pulled the world out of a depression, etc. So, and it's immensely detailed, and you can see just how it happens, how decisions are made, by people in power. Conrad Black did an excellent job. The other two, very insightful, particularly Alan's book, because it's quite funny. But if you have a chance to read a good biography of a senior political decision maker in your country, your province, read it, because it also tells you about the downsides often of political office and the pressures they're under and the considerations they have to balance in assessing your ask. So they're good. Practically any biography of a president will help. Not Trump. Don't worry about that one.
Well, I'm intrigued anybody would put anybody up against Churchill as being the most impactful of the 20th century. But if someone was going to write that biography, it would be Conrad Black. Just have your thesaurus or your dictionary close by. We're going to go. Okay, now I'm really looking forward to what you might have, Kathy. Wrong one. Just give me a second here.
I've got the books here too, John. I can just hold up.
Well, you could, but I want to be elegant, even though audience members will know I'm not. We're going to try and get your picks on the screen. But maybe we're going to have to resort to what you just said. Okay, well, I regret. We're just going to go with you're holding them up for us. So let's do that, Kathy.
Okay, so The War Against the Family. I mean, you can see this thing is massive. This really got me going. William Gardner, he also wrote The Trouble About Canada. So, I mean, this really gives the background as to what the family today is dealing with. The other book, in terms of human sex trafficking, which is my focus, is Invisible Chains. It really is the first Canadian book. It's by Benjamin Perrin, who's a law professor at UBC. And again, the research is here. The stats are here. I think this is a terribly, terribly important book for really understanding the issue. And you can get it online, you know, Amazon, used copies, all the rest of it. And then Joyce Smith, she is the MP or the member of parliament that introduced our three laws on human trafficking. And this is her book, and it's the true story of Canadian human trafficking. This one is very readable. It's, believe it or not, it describes what human trafficking looks like. So for any young people out there, you know, get a copy of this book. You will find it readable, and then you'll really get it. The new book that's come out, and I appreciate this man very much, this is Dr. Robert Christmas. He's a Winnipeg police officer. I really use this book now because he's got the recent stats and the research, and I quote him a lot. We've been interviewed together. Again, he's from Manitoba. He's very, very good. And then I have to say it. Ta-da! There's my book. I mean, it's just getting printed now, but you can see it's Child Sex Trafficking in Canada and How to Stop It. I am calling it the primer and textbook on the issue for Canada. It will be really useful for educators, frontline service providers, parents. It's just very readable. It makes the issue not scary, and it will help us all to turn back the dial and stop this problem in Canada.
Well, if anybody didn't already respect you hugely for 600 meetings as a volunteer, they're going to respect you for getting a book out, and it's not your first. Congratulations. That is amazing. You mentioned Bill Gardner, and it's just curious. He founded an organization called Civitas, which is it's called a society where ideas meet. I'm now on the board of Civitas, and its annual conference will be in Toronto, April 20th to 30th, with an intriguing group of panels. So if anybody's interested, go to civitas.ca to sign up for that. Kathy and John, I wanted to suggest a couple of my own picks. So let's see if, and by the way, Kathy, yours will be included in the recorded version. So we're going to get that slide up one way or the other. Let me share screen here, and let's hope that we can get on the screen what we're trying to get on the screen. Now, I'm just wondering if this is showing, whether or not it's showing. I'm going to run quickly through my picks, and I'm just hopeful that audience members can see this. At the risk of self congratulations, I'm putting on the screen the book that I wrote on achieving excellence in government, because it talks about some of the things that you discussed, John Moon, and just, you know, the travails of leading a political life and some of the great failings that I experienced and some of the successes and the triumphs. And then there's a famous book that was written by a Harvard professor or two, Roger Fisher, about negotiating, and it's called Getting to Yes. He was one of the negotiators who helped free the hostages that were taken by Iranian forces, I think it was in 1979. And it's a great book on negotiating. The way it works, a little bit cynical, Eddie Goldenberg's book, he was a close associate, I believe, of Jean Chrétien. John Moonen will correct me if I'm wrong, but the book talks about how things happen. And, you know, if you believe that politicians and political parties and governments work in a methodical, logical, and intelligent fashion, I'm afraid that he may put a pin in your balloon. And then the classic, Machiavelli's The Prince, taught in all poli-sci courses in political philosophy, about doing things like, if you're going to cast awards to people, do it over a long period of time. If you're going to do something they're not going to like, then make sure you do it quickly and all together. Preston Manning has two great books. They're practical, they're effective. Some call him the best prime minister that Canada never had, Faith, Leadership, and Public Life, and his more recent book, Do Something. It's a great topic because he's kind of mocking himself with the title. Everybody has, who knows Preston, has heard him say in his rather unique voice, do something. And so that's what he called his book. So with that, I'm going to take you to the future. I hope you enjoyed this evening's discussion. I sure did. I would enjoy a discussion anytime, any season with Kathy or John. We have a couple of upcoming shows that I want you to know about. Give me a second here. We'll see if we can get them up on the screen. The one in May is about character as it affects leadership. And I'm sorry, folks, I'm having trouble here with my share screen, but there's no joy here because I'm just not seeing it. What a shame. I'm wondering if this is visible to our audience. It's on our website. If it's not, it's Why Character Counts in Leadership, featuring Dave Phillips and Jonathan Michael. I especially would like audience members to note the date has changed. It's no longer the second Thursday in May. It'll be May 8th, live at 5 p.m. And then we have also the last one, which will be in June, last one for the season at least. And that one is Challenges to Women in Leadership. And we have the former director of the Peace Corps, Carrie Hester Radelet, along with three young dragons, Rose Kamyab and Yun Kong and Mei Mei Weston. Rose is a future doctor, Yun a future lawyer, Mei Mei a future something, we don't know yet, but it's going to be a great conversation among those four women, and I hope that you'll enjoy that. That will be on June 8th. So folks, especially in the audience, thanks for joining us tonight. I really, really hope that you've picked up some tips on how to make our community and our country better from two wonderful people who do this every day in their lives. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, John. And good night, everybody.
Good night.